Please can you remind me if you'll be so kind, staring out into space, asking God to hear my case, trying to think of all things past, how long will my memory last? The purple angel, the purple angel. Well, hi, everyone, and welcome to Alzheimer's Speaks Radio. I'm your host, Lori LeBay, and not only am I the founder of Alzheimer's Speaks, but I'm the daughter of a mother who lived with Alzheimer's disease for 30 years. So today on this show, we are going to be talking about getting the best care, and I'm so excited to have this conversation with our author, Keith Gallis, today. But before I dive in and introduce him, we are always getting new listeners and people want to know what exactly does Alzheimer's Speaks do. And bottom line, we are an advocacy-based company that provides multiple platforms. So we have the radio show, the blog, we do videos on YouTube, speaking and training, all different types of avenues to be able to reach you and get you the information that you need. And you know, I also, when I started this company, I really wanted people at all levels to be able to participate and to share their knowledge and insights. So everyone is welcomed as a guest here. And you have to excuse, I've got a frog in my throat. My daughter's got pneumonia and I'm trying to like battle the crud off here. But I think it's important to, again, to listen to everybody's voice. And to make sure that we are sharing our knowledge, I just think it is so powerful. So if you, you know, have a story of isolation and guilt, frustration, maybe you're just exhausted, maybe you're just still in shock from getting a diagnosis or scared to go into the doctor, we want to hear from everyone because there is another side to this path where you can find joy and purpose and passion and continue on with life. And that's really what we're about, is trying to shift our dementia care from crisis to comfort around the world by, again, openly sharing stories and resources. And so if you are a person living with dementia, and Alzheimer's Speaks is inclusive of all dementias, not just Alzheimer's, maybe you're a family member or friend, maybe you're a researcher, an advocate, a business, an author, a singer, a songwriter, touch base with me. I would love to hear what your story is and what your thoughts are on how we can improve dementia care. Also, if you're a business and are interested in learning a little bit more about how to expand your brand footprint, I would love to talk to you regarding that, because we do have some marketing opportunities available for people in need of that as well. Now, again, before I get started, I want to give a shout out to some of my pet projects out there that I just adore. One is Stall Catchers, and Stall Catchers is a game that can be played by anybody, basically age 6 to 96, and you can actually help analyze real-life Alzheimer's data. How cool is that? Just go to stallcatchers.com. Then there's the memory cafes where people with early to mid dementia and their care partners gather with others going down the same journey. And they're just powerful, fun groups where people really build a new peer community to support one another. And you go and find, see if one's in your area at memorycafe.com. Or maybe you have one and you want to get listed, they will gladly list you there for free. And then, you know, back in 2017, I did a cruise, a dementia-friendly cruise, and I haven't done one since, but Lisa Marie Chiquero is having her second annual cruise, and I highly recommend working with Lisa. She does a great job, and you can visit her website at alzcruisetropics.com. And she has another Caribbean cruise set up for March 1st through the 8th of 2020. So please go ahead and check that out. Last, I'm just going to give a shout out to Artist Senior Living. They've been so nice about hosting me around the country. I'm going to be in Reading and Lexington, Massachusetts, November 13th through the 15th, so that's this next week. And then I'm going to be heading down to Alabama Cares for the East Alabama Area Aging Agency on Aging, November 20th through the 23rd. If you're in those areas, I would love for you to come out and visit with me. It's always nice to meet people around the country. So with that, I'm going to do one other little wrap-up and, again, encourage you to reach out to me if you'd like to be a guest on the show. And then, of course, I'd be amiss if I didn't thank you all for your likes, your clicks, your shares. It's just spectacular how far of a reach you have expanded Alzheimer's Speaks through your kindness, through those little acts. Because, you know, none of us know who in our circle of influence is dealing with this, because so many people don't talk about it. So the more information we can get out there, the more likely people are going to engage. So let's go ahead and get on with our conversation today. Again, we are lucky to have Keith Gellis with us, and he is a memory care director, and he has spent more than 20 years helping families work through and often heart-wrenching questions that can rush upon families when they discover their loved one has dementia. And so for many years, families have sat down with Keith to ask advice concerning, you know, their circumstances. And today, Keith is a regional director overseeing assisted living communities as well as memory care communities. And he has been referred to as the gold standard of memory care in Atlanta. So how cool is that to have Keith with us? He has written the book, Parental Dementia, which is a guide through all difficult questions when people are, you know, stumble into this. Because nobody walks in this willingly. It just kind of all hits us like a train. So welcome, Keith. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well. Thank you so much, Lori.
Well, good. I'm so excited to have you with us. Now, I always ask our guests one first question, and that is, have you been personally touched in your own family or circle of friends by anyone who's been diagnosed with dementia?
Well, yes, and that really, my father had, had quite a bit of issues with dementia and Parkinson's. And that really got me into the healthcare industry. You know, at one time I owned and ran restaurants, and, you know, I saw caregivers come to the house and do tremendous things that, you know, I never thought was possible. And it really was inspiring. And when the opportunity came about where I could, you know, jump into the healthcare industry, and that first came with independent living. And when I had that opportunity, I took it. And frankly, my wife and I jumped into it together. And we just, you know, like you said, you kind of stumble into it. You just don't jump into it. But seeing what trained caregivers can actually do to help my father was just amazing. And, you know, about 10 years later, I got into the industry, and I found myself really wanting to help people with dementia. And that's really what my calling became.
Okay, great. Now, one of the things that I always like to ask people is, what made you want to write your book, Parental Dementia, A Guide Through All Difficult Questions? And Lord knows there's many of them.
Yes. Well, the long story, because I don't want you to talk anymore. Well, the long story is that I actually, you know, every year I get the flu, and I caught back in early part of 2018, I caught a pretty bad flu, went to the doctors. Doctor said, yeah, you're going to be at home for about a week. So I got home and I'm thinking, what the heck am I going to do for a week? And I get a phone call from my community. And they said, Keith, we have a gentleman here that's, you know, looking for his mother, is considering memory care. we're hoping to put you on a speakerphone and could you answer some of his questions? So I said, absolutely. So about an hour later, after I had answered those questions, you know, I hung up and I started to think about, you know, all the tours throughout my career and all the questions that I had received from family members. You know, questions like, what is dementia? You know, what are my options? Is, you know, what's the difference between assisted living and memory care? Why, you know, is this the right place for my mom? And, you know, so I decided to write down a list of all those questions. When I got to about 20, I started to write in the answers. And it took me about a week, and that filled up my week and went back to work. And I, over a year's time, I polished it and did a lot of research and, you know, brought it to about 15 questions. And I figured that, you know, each question I get most could be a chapter in a book. And that's really how the book was created. Literally questions from family members and the ones I get most and I think that are the most important. So that's really why I wrote the book.
Well, that's fantastic. One of the things I love about how you've designed the book is, of course, you've got chapters in the front, but each chapter, those questions like stand out and scream at you, because which I think is really cool, because that's typically how the family is feeling. It's like, you know, like chapter one, what do I do now? You know, I mean, that is just so on somebody's mind and they can't miss it when they just, you know, kind of flip through the pages. Or like you said, what is dementia? How do I know if mom is getting dementia? There's endless things. What the heck is sundowning? I mean, and you can find those things again. You can go to, you know, the chapters in the front of the a book, but even as you skim through, they just stand out really, really nicely and easily. Why don't we talk a little bit about, you know, you started the book by asking the question, you know, what do I do now? And why is that important for, you know, a son or a daughter to ask first?
Well, you know, I start the book by exactly what you said, you know, from the point, from the very beginning when you may be the son or daughter or loved one in the doctor's office when the diagnosis is given, or, you know, when you find out. And the book really starts from the beginning to, you know, the eventual end. But the very first thing I think should always be to let mom or dad, husband or wife, know that you love them. And that you're going to be here and we're going to work through this and everything will be okay. I think that's very important. And, you know, when people are stressed out, that's definitely not going to help, you know, the process of dementia. So that's the first thing. The second thing is get organized. And that's why I wrote the book. You know, the first chapter, as you were describing, initially I kind of wanted to write this book as a workbook. And so I have for the first chapter, I have a companion worksheet that goes along with the first chapter. And it's really about, you know, getting organized, getting to know. I mean, if you're becoming a power of attorney, you're taking over, you know, someone that, you know, the life of someone that is 70, 80, 90 years old sometimes. And there's a lot there to get a handle of, you know, the medications, the doctors, if there's a will. Is there a DNR? Is there an attorney? Getting to know the insurances and choice of hospitals and things like that. So there's a lot to get organized on. And basically the first chapter is helping you get organized to where, you know, families, you know, unfortunately, sometimes you're doing it all by yourself. Sometimes families are involved. And it's a matter of kind of getting all the information and then reaching out for help and directing, you know, people on what responsibilities they have in this process. You know, sometimes I talk to, in support groups, sometimes I talk to, you know, husbands and wives, and sometimes it's just the two of them. And they have told me that the first chapter has really helped them to kind of pinpoint, you know, okay, this is, we got to get organized and this is the direction we're going to go. And just by following directions, sometimes it helps rather than just kind of going by the seat of your pants and trying to figure it out. It's helpful to really have a plan. And this, the first chapter particularly helps you build a plan.
Which I think is very important. And it's just nice to know that you're not in it alone, that someone whose experience mm-hmm. is guiding you. I mean, that alone can help reduce the anxiety and just calm you down and go, okay, others have done this before me. We're going to get through mm-hmm. this. I think that's
absolutely.
Just a huge, huge factor with this. You, like I said, you've laid the book out really, really nice. Why don't you tell us about Hallie, who wrote Chapter 12, and you know why you asked her to contribute to the group, to the book, and she has written her chapter is titled "What Should I Expect from the Community After We Move In?" And I think that that's a really, really important question because, yeah, you've picked it, but now what? Now where do we go?
Right. Well, yeah, great question. You know, Hallie, so to kind of explain that is, you know, I had all these chapters. And when, you know, when you write a book, there's some chapters you really feel strong about and other chapters like, not sure if that's strong enough. Well, I always had a problem with that chapter, chapter 12. And mm-hmm. I really thought that it, to be as accurate as possible and as meaningful as possible, it really should come from a family member rather than from my point of view. So, coincidentally, I just happened to have a family conference with Hallie and her husband. She, at the time, had her mother and father at my community. And, of course, you have family conferences from time to time to talk about, you know, care plans and whatnot. But after that meeting, we just started kind of talking, and I found out that she was a writer. And, you know, I told her, hey, I've got a manuscript that I might want you to take a look at. She thought, yeah, that's great. And I said, as a matter of fact, there's a chapter that I've really been kind of stressing out about. I want you to consider possibly even writing a chapter. So, you know, she said she'd think about it. And eventually she came to me with a great chapter on her experiences. And what I didn't know is that we were the fourth community that her mom and dad had been in. Apparently she had some issues with other communities. So that chapter really takes you from the start of finding out that, you know, her mom and dad were starting to have issues with dementia. And then the process of finding, you know, going through the options. So it's a wonderful chapter as far as the pros and cons of communities. She also surprised me, frankly, with she provided me with 10 stories that really didn't fit the chapter, but they're, you know, half a page to a page stories about, you know, things about her children, how they reacted to their grandmother and grandfather's actions when she discovered what sundowning is and those type of things. So what I decided to do is kind of sprinkle those stories throughout the book. And mm-hmm. I included some of the stories myself. And what, you know, what readers have said to me is that it really, it kind of adds kind of a cool flavor to the book in that it kind of, it breaks up from learning in directions to, you know, entertainment a little bit as far as these stories will make you laugh and they'll make you cry. And, you know, that makes for a full day. So,
yep.
And I know you've read the book and that's really, you know, with Hallie coming on and doing that chapter, it really, I think, added a lot to the book as far as credibility and as far as seeing it from not only my perspective, but also a family member's perspective about the process.
Yeah, well, and I like that it's raising the voice of the family. I think sometimes in the equation, families can feel like they're just kind of a pawn in the game, get moved around. But when their voice is really being heard, and I think those stories are so powerful because they're coming from the heart, you know, no matter what condition the heart and the mind happen to be in, you know, depending on
sure.
the story. I mean, it's just this expanse of emotion and in a real life experience that, again, I think it makes it easier for others to say, okay, people before me have walked this path and,
mm-hmm.
you know, they're willing to share. And I think it also helps others open up about their own journey as well, because so many times I think people want to keep this private, don't air your dirty laundry, and you know, it's not dirty laundry, it's just health and well-being we're talking about here, and yet there's, you know, especially when it comes to dementia, some people feel ashamed that they, you know, got the disease or a family member has it, or they feel embarrassed because they don't understand it, and you know, to me, we just have to get past all of that and
sure.
learn, you know, from one another on that. I think it's very important. You know, you write about the importance of family getting help for their loved ones' care. So let's talk a little bit about that and, you know, what the heck are some of their options? And I know over the years, a lot of the terminology has even changed in different types of housing and support services have popped up. How do people keep it all straight?
Mm-hmm. You know, it's a very, very important question. And frankly, this is why I love your show so much, is that you offer many ideas for support, and it's needed. If you've been to any support groups, you see some wonderful people that are having a hard time. I believe there's an epidemic of depressed families out, you know, family caregivers out there. There's a little worksheet that I put in the book that really compares caregiver burnout to PTSD. Very similar responses to, you know, to what is going on in their life, and it's tough, and they, unfortunately, a lot of people don't want or not really know about what's available out there. And Lori, you know, there are some awesome family caregivers out there. The thing is, though, is, you know, as I speak at support groups, I hear incredible stories of families sacrificing everything. You know, in the later stages of dementia care, everything changes. You know, there are people that sacrifice their entire house, their job, their own health. Frankly, you know, we get to meet some incredible people that are completely stressed out, and they may not even be aware of it. I withdrawn from family and friends, and you know, I talk to these people that come in, wonderful people, wonderful family members that just are, okay, we made the decision that we're going to start looking, you know, for help. And by that time, a lot of times, they're mentally and physically exhausted. And unfortunately, I've also met some people that are actually suicidal. It's just, it's a very tough gig to be a caregiver with dementia. There's a documentary about the invisible patient that talks about that as well. But the crazy thing is, in 2017 and one in 2018, there are studies that show that the numbers for caregivers are between 30% and 34% that are actually dying from stress-related conditions before the person that they're actually caring for. So when you literally say out loud that a third of caregivers are passing away before the person with the actual disease, that's scary, and it's just not right. It's not good. So when your show and I talk to people about dementia daycare, home care, respite care, memory care, and then you've had even episodes about, you know, the memory cafes that are awesome. I actually had my book launch at a at a memory cafe here in outside Atlanta in a city called Roswell, and a place called Amy's Place. And they do tremendous things there, and they're wonderful people there. But the whole, I guess, to answer your question, you know, the thing that is tough is sometimes to ask for help. And just like you would, when you had asked me this question, it's sometimes people, for whatever reason, are embarrassed, and they shouldn't be. This is reality, and we need to get through this. So there, you know, in the book, it does talk about all of your options, you know, pros and cons of every option. And it helps mm-hmm. people to understand, because let's face it, I mean, when we were kids, we didn't say, okay, I'm going to study about dementia. No, these are things that we kind of fall into and we learn about. So, again, I love your show because it always tells the listeners what they're, you know, where to go for help if they want mm-hmm. it. And yeah. there are some that do a tremendous job at home by themselves, and they get through it and they do a great job, and God bless them. But there are some, and a lot, that are having a lot of trouble. And I see them coming in asking questions all the time. And there comes a time where you got to ask for help.
Yeah, one of your chapters is, you know, why is everyone telling me I need help? And a lot of times, like other things, others can see what we can't because we're too much in the thick of it. And I was a classic case of that. You know, I was so entrenched in getting everything done and being responsible that I didn't have a clue how it was affecting me. And you know, I ended up having some health issues when I was caring for my mom with dementia, and my dad had brain cancer. And then all of a sudden, you know, I was having anxiety, you know, so I had a little something for that. And all of a sudden I had asthma, which I never had that. And I had acid reflux and I never had that. And you know, they were all little things, but they were big changes in, you know, mm-hmm. my body. And, you know, I had friends that wanted me to get together for a cup of coffee, and I kept turning them down. And thank God they didn't give up on me, because it wasn't until I finally, very reluctantly, met with them. And I met with them more to get them off my back, because they were just another thing for me to do. I mean, that was really my mind frame. Mm-hmm. And, I said I'd give them 10 minutes, you know, just to kind of, they stopped bugging me. And I stayed for 2 hours and we laughed and we cried. And it wasn't until that moment I realized how empty I had become. And even years after, you know, my dad had passed and my mom was, you know, in her end stages, but, you know, more stabilized in things where I didn't have to do as much care because she was placed then. I was selling real estate, and I remember a client noticing a physical difference in me. And they said, Lori, what are you doing? And I said, what? And they mm-hmm. said, you know, because they sold tons of homes for me. And they said, your eyes were always so dark and intense, and they are just like glistening blue. And it was like my plate, you know, I wasn't feeling so heavily weighted down anymore. And I had, you know, I had reconnected with friends, and it, you know, caring for others wasn't my whole focus. And for many years it was. And I think a lot of people fall into that trap. You can fall into it from guilt. You can fall into it for like a zillion different reasons. And again, it's something I wanted to do, but it really sidetracked me in my life for a while, and I didn't have a clue how it was affecting my physical body or even my personality in terms of how I reacted to things. And so I think it's really important for people to share those stories and reach out. I wasn't going to go to a support group either, because then when I got into, you know, doing Alzheimer's speak, I thought, well, you know, I speak and train on that, I don't need a support group. And then I went to listen to a friend talk, and then he got sick and didn't even show up. And so I'm like, well, I can't just leave the support group. And I stayed, and I thought, oh my gosh, this is really helpful. But in my mind, I thought, I can't add another thing on my list that I'm doing for my parents. I just don't have it in me. And I didn't even realize, I mean, how dumb does that sound? I didn't even realize that the support group was really for me. In my mind, I was doing this for them. And it was, you know, and to meet those other people and to hear their stories and stuff. And so I think no matter who you are, you can get blocked and not have a rational view of what's really happening when you're dealing with a chronic illness and it's so intense.
You're absolutely right. You know, we talk to a lot of people that just feel guilt because, you know, well, I don't deserve, you know, to take a vacation or I don't need a break. You know, I'll be fine if I can just get a little bit of sleep. And, you know, and if they ask for help, they feel guilty. Or if they get a home, someone to come to their home just to give them a break, they feel guilty. And, you know, I'm so happy that, you know, I'm not happy you had that experience, but I'm so happy that you're letting your listeners hear that because it's unfortunate and it needs to be said to help people understand that you got to ask for help.
Yeah. Well, and even when you said, if I can just get a little bit of sleep, I had to like bite my cheeks to not burst out laughing because I can't tell you how many times that thought, I'll just give me 15 minutes. No, you need 8 hours of sleep. You might need a whole week, just a way to regroup. I mean, and that's okay because, and again, I think what most of us don't see when we're in the middle of it is we cannot give the best possible care when we haven't cared for our own body well. You know, when we are just, you know, we're kind of like that frayed rope and you don't know when it's going to crack at any time, you know, because you're just climbing up and trying to stay out of the trap with the alligators below, you know, it's a weird thing. You don't see it. I don't think most people see it when they're in the middle of it. You're just thinking, I can do this. And, you know, I've done it this long. You know, and I'm doing okay. And we see it as a, I think I did anyways, without even knowing that this is what I was thinking, that I would be a failure if I couldn't do it on my own. And I think that there's this expectation in society where even though people talk about, hey, you should get help or I want to help, people don't really step in. They make the comment, you know, and it's, but there's not the follow through with the true support because people don't know how to do that because they don't want to overstep bounds. And I mean, it's like everyone's walking on eggshells and we're not building functional teams. And even with the families, we don't have some of the raw discussions that need to be had because it's uncomfortable and people don't want to go there. Or you're doing a fine job. You just keep it up, sis. You know,
and if it's just you and your loved one, what happened? You can't get sick. You know, you're not sick. You can't be sick. So when they wheel you away in an ambulance, what is your loved one going to do? You know, and that happens. So, and that's one of the sad parts of our community that sometimes, you know, people just refuse to get help or refuse to go to the hospital when they need it because they're taking care of their loved one.
Well, I've had, you know, many people who have, you know, ended up in the hospital and then all of a sudden family realizes, oh my gosh, what are we going to do with mom or dad or whoever the other person is? And people are like, we need a backup plan and we've got to lighten this load. This is, you know, but it's so sad that it takes a crisis for most families to wake up to the amount of stress and things that are happening. Because, again, when you love somebody, you don't mind doing it, but it still can take a toll. There still can be physical and psychological pulls, you know, on your body that are going to affect things, no matter, you know, how good of a Stepford Wife smile you can slap on your face and say everything's okay.
Sure.
You know, but that's kind of how we've been taught to do things and stuff. So, yeah, I think that those things are so, so important. Now, in the back of the book, you have some great worksheets for people too. Why don't you talk a little bit about those? Because I think those are really helpful as well.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I developed quite a few different worksheets. The one I talked to you about earlier, you know, that goes along with Chapter 1 is the worksheet to kind of get organized and to help families get focused on what to do next, step-by-step, you know, manual type thing. There's I developed a tour worksheet. Now, when the time comes to start looking, if he ever does, if the time comes where you want to start looking for assisted living or memory care, you literally can mathematically find on paper the best place that works, that fill, you know, all the boxes. But I would say 90% of the time, I think people make decisions, you know, using their gut, you know. So at the very least, what I've heard from readers is, you know, this tour worksheet kind of helps solidify their gut feeling, you know, on what, on which building is best. And then there's a difficult one that I made. It's a value graph. And it's, you know, I work with a lot of different hospice companies, and I've been in those meetings where the hospice, a representative from the hospice company will talk to the power of attorney and say, okay, for these end of life questions, you know, what does your mom or your dad, you know, what do they want? And I would say 50% of the time, a lot of the answers are, I don't know. So I put together a value graph chart that will help you to find out how, you know, where your loved one, where your mom or dad or your husband or wife is, you know, thinking about those end of life questions. So it's a tough conversation, and sometimes it's even better to have a third party come in and say, your son Keith wanted to, wanted me to talk to you about some of these questions. And sometimes family members will talk to a total stranger about these tough questions rather than someone they love very much. So it's to help prepare, you know, and be ready, because it's more important for what your loved one wants than what you want. So there's that value graph as well. And, yeah, they're at the end of the book, but they can also go to my website, parentaldementia.com, and download and print a PDF form as well. And, you know, I recommend putting together a folder to help you keep organized, and that's part of the book as far as putting together a game plan. So to download, you know, as many of these worksheets as you feel you would like. There's also another one that I think is very helpful. You know, many of us have never had to hire anybody. Well, there may come a time where you may want to hire a caregiver. And typically, and it, you know, in the book, it kind of gives you the pros and cons to bringing a caregiver at home. But if that is the decision, you know, you may want to know, you know, and have questions ready to interview a caregiver. A lot of people will just call an agency and they'll send out somebody, and, you know, mom might not like that person, or that person, there's not a good fit. So there is also a worksheet that has, you know, questions to ask and defining, you know, finding the right person that you think will be a good fit with your loved one. So thank you for mentioning that. There's some good. So basically, you know, these worksheets and the whole book itself, I've tried to, you know, create a book that helps families from start to finish, and just be a step-by-step manual, basically on everything possible that I can think of, to answer the pros and cons to every option, and so that you can make an educated decision rather than just kind of, you know, just figuring it out as you go. So, yeah, thank you for bringing that up.
Yeah, no, I think these are really helpful. And I think, too, you know, like with the community tour, your head can get spinning as to who did what and who had what. Or they might use a little bit different terms, you know, to sound different, but they're still kind of the basic same delivery of services and stuff. So, you know, it can get tricky out there. And your value graph, I think, is fantastic. Do you mind if I read just a couple of these questions you have on that?
Sure. Sure.
You ask, to live as long as possible, regardless of quality of life. And then you rate these. One is not to five is very important. To be comfortable and as pain-free as possible. Maybe somebody doesn't want to live on life support. So you've got a question for that about leaving good memories. Is it important to maybe leave money to family? Because some people would rather not spend it on themselves, and say, nope, this is the end of my life. I would rather leave an inheritance to my family. CPR, chemotherapy, organ donor, funerals. I know my family didn't want to talk about funerals, even though my mom was really big into, participating in the dying process and educating us as kids. My parents didn't have a prepaid will or a prepaid burial fund and stuff. And we went through all that to make sure that, we got what they wanted, because you don't know what you don't know. And I had not a clue, neither did my brothers, of what questions would be asked of us and needed to be answered or paperwork to have when the time came. And so that was a really helpful process. I think for all of us, we felt much better just having those conversations. Or I know talking to my daughter, I told her, I want to be cremated, and she doesn't like that idea. She doesn't want me to be burned. And, my big joke with her is, let me be small at some point in my life. Come on. And I don't have to, be in a cemetery for you to feel close to me. So we ended up having these deeper discussions and stuff about things. And, I think all that stuff is really, really important. My daughter and I had a conversation the other day on, I have a lot of friends going through cancer right now. And I just told her, I said, honey, I just want you to know, and I could change my mind, but at this point, I don't know if I would go that option if I ever develop cancer. I firmly believe we're not supposed to live forever. That's my personal philosophy. And no, I don't want to go, but I don't want to live how I've seen many of my friends live out their life,
Right.
And so I just want you to know that that's a possibility. And, she's like, well, I don't want to talk about that. And I'm like, I really don't care. We need to have these conversations.
It's important. Yeah.
It really is.
Yeah, it's very private. And, my father, people would say he's a man's man. It's not a conversation that he would have with his son. But, these are things that, we had to kind of feel our way through and make decisions for him, which I'm really disappointed that, we had to do that. But unless you have that conversation, you're making incredibly difficult decisions. And, it's better to hear.
Even when you have the conversations, like with my mom, we and dad, we talked about exactly what they wanted. And, we did purposely do all that stuff. We did the do not resuscitate. And I remember when my mom, was really having some significant issues with seizures, and they thought this could be the beginning of the end. And she had been living in a nursing home for 10 years. And they said, we need to really update this paperwork. And I knew what she wanted, but even as I signed it, I questioned it. And I remember her sleeping in her big Jerry wheelchair, and I was just bawling when the nurse left. And I said, Mom, is this still what you want? And out of a dead sleep, she woke up, she turned her head towards me, and she went, yep. And she went right back to sleep. And it just made me laugh, and go, okay, I can live with this now. And I was very lucky she was able to pull that out for me in that moment. Not everybody is so lucky, but you still, even when you've had these deep discussions and multiple times, and it's still, when it comes down to it, it's difficult. And if you're like most of us, you'll still second guess yourself. But just be thankful you had those conversations to begin with, because if you didn't have those, I can't even imagine, the wondering people would be going through and the extra anxiety.
It's one of those, that I get the most feedback on that is very, it's a very difficult conversation. And, but you know, it's with a, you know, blame it on that piece of paper. Say, well, they want me to ask you these questions, you know, you got to work through it and you got to be ready. So,
You know, the other thing I like, Keith, in your book is you have a glossary. And we get in the industry, we throw out little acronyms all the time that people don't have a clue. And yet they're too overwhelmed to tell us to slow down and explain. And they'll go, okay. And then they'll get home and they'll try to, you know, tell somebody else. And they're like, well, I think it was this. What does it stand for? I don't know. You know, but I think it had something to do. And, and it's like, we as professionals really need to slow down and know that not everybody is familiar with all of our words. And, you know, even the word respite, you know, people don't have a clue. Most people don't have a clue what that means unless they've had to deal with it before. And so, you know, that's very, very, very important, I think, for people.
So, absolutely. Publishers tell you, you know, to have your family read the manuscript, you know, and get feedback. And well, the feedback I got was things exactly what you're saying. You know, what's PRN mean? What does UTI mean? So, you know, you have to go back and kind of fix that language. But I, you know, there's some things that just, you know, it's kind of tough to fix. So I wanted to put a glossary in there. You know, just to help people, because they're going to hear these other terms when they meet with, you know, caregivers or meet at a memory care. And it's just a way for them to be educated and understand the flow of this conversation and not question and have a full understanding of what someone's talking about.
Yeah. You also do a nice job because this is a big one in Chapter 13, Financial Solutions. Because people don't have a clue of, you know, what are the possibilities and then how the heck are we going to pay for it? Is it covered? Isn't it covered? You know, and so you've really broken this down quite nicely, from bridge loans and reverse mortgages to grants to annuities to life insurance. I mean, there's just so many pieces of the puzzle that can be pulled into things. It's important. In my eyes, I think, you know, it's nice if all families would be able to afford to, you know, speak with an elder law attorney who can kind of help guide them through some of all of this jazz too, because it is overwhelming and every state's a little bit different. And
one of the things that I've gotten from some of my readers is that, they say, you know, like in Wizard of Oz, I've kind of pulled back the curtain on a few things. You know, when it comes time to sign an agreement, what, you know, before you sign, there are some questions you need to ask or some negotiations to ask for. And, you know, I think I've saved some people some money. And as far as, you know, what you're talking about as far as financial, you know, there are so many people that benefit from aid and attendance, you know, from the from Veterans Administration. But, you know, there are so many families that get bogged down because they say, well, geez, it's just so much work. Well, yeah, but, you know, you can go to an elder law attorney and they'll help you through it. But there's a lot of other ways to do it as well, and it talks about that in the book.
Yeah. Well, in bottom line, it's the elder law attorney's not going to make that decision for you, you know, unless you're going to, you know, sign over and they're going to be, you know, guardian or something over the situation. You know, they can kind of point out things. But, yeah, it's an interesting process. And you have in Chapter 10, how do I choose the best memory care community? And you have, you know, a whole page of questions here for people to consider. And again, you don't know what you don't know until it's too late sometimes. And to go, well, if I would have known that, I wouldn't have, you know, made that decision. And that's, again, why it's so important for us to have all of these conversations. You even have a little something in here about giving up the car keys. And, you know, that's another big part of the puzzle, too, in terms of levels of independence as skill sets change. And how do you go about dealing with those things in a safe but yet respectful and dignified manner for a person with memory loss? Well, Keith, this has just been a great conversation, and I'm so glad you got sick and wrote this book. when you got sick, you took time to think about what you were going to do with your downtime and wrote this book, because it really is a very, very helpful. And it's, you know, folks, it's one of those books too that you don't have to read it from cover to cover. You can easily dive into certain chapters that you just need help with, or you need a refresher's course on, or, you know, you're helping somebody else. And to me, those are the most helpful books when, you know, I can jump in and get what I need when I need it. And, you know, it's not an overly long book either. You know, it's just a little over about, 150 pages or so, I'm going to guess.
Right.
And yet it's broken down nicely, so you're not going to feel heavy. I think you'll feel lifted and supported, you know, when reading the book, which is always a nice thing to do. With that. So
that's really nice. Thank you so much for saying that.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a fan of you and everything that you do. So that means a lot to me that what you're saying there. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, you've got on the book cover, the essential book for dementia families. And I really do believe that. I think it's a wonderful, wonderful resource. And, you know, you might want to even check with your library, because, you know, libraries are now starting to have actual sections for dementia and caregiving now. And, you know, recommend that if they don't have this book, if maybe you're not able to purchase one, then tell them you would like them to purchase this, because they're always looking for things as well. And again, it's called Parental Dementia, A Guide Through All Those Difficult Questions. Anything that we didn't touch on in the book, we've got a few minutes left, but I just want to make sure that we covered everything we should have.
Yeah, one of the things that I did for this podcast and for your listeners, and if they want to order the book, they can go to the website, parentaldementia.com, and it'll send you to a link to order the book. And if you put in the code word MOM, which capital MOM, there's a discount for your readers to catch, you know, to get the book. And if you're one of those folks that have a Kindle or whatnot, there's also an ebook version as well. And that's actually is very inexpensive. So, definitely I want to get this in the hands of anyone that is needing it and to help them through this process.
Yeah, this would be a great book too for, I know some memory cafes have little libraries of their own, where,
right.
People in ours, we have a bunch of books, but a lot of people will bring a book in and then leave it with the group and say, okay, I've got this information, but I also know if I need to look something up, I could come back in here and grab it. And so they share resources all the time. And that's a really nice thing. Or even, you know, if you're in a different type of support group and stuff too, these resources that you find are important to share with others, because, you know, we're all so much more alike than we are different. And I think we can really help one another out nicely with that. So thank you so much for your time today. And again, for writing the book, Parental Dementia, A Guide Through All the Difficult Questions. I think you'll find the book just amazing. So please go and visit Keith's site. Again, that's parentaldementia.com. And use the discount word MOM to purchase that book and save a little money. Well, again, thank you so much for being with us. Really appreciate it, Keith.
Thank you so much, Lori. And continue just to be a big part, a big voice within the dementia community. And I hope you feel better soon, and your daughter too.
I know. I had a little honey in my tea, so my throat calmed down there, so that was good.
Nice.
Thank you so much. In wrapping up, I'm just going to give a shout out to Maria Schreiber, who just wrapped up her Move for Minds event. And she does that with a organization that she has called the Women's Alzheimer's Movement. She's just such a great advocate and soul in pushing information forward and really, really making a difference. So go to her website, thewomensalzheimersmovement.org, to find out more. And then I want to give a shout out to also the Alzheimer's Research and Prevention Foundation. They take kind of a holistic approach, so diet, exercise, meditation, and they've got some great training available there as well. And you can just go to alzheimersprevention.org. That's alzheimersprevention.org for more information. And then last, I'm going to shout out to the A-List. They're connected with Us Against Alzheimer's, and they are really connecting families to researchers to better understand the needs of those living with dementia. And they just, in fact, put out some of their results, which are real interesting. And what I love about it is they're short, you know, maybe a couple question, yes and no answer or multiple choice, but they get to the heart of things. And it's, you know, by participating, it really is helping everyone. And you can go to usagainstalzheimers.org. That's usagainstalzheimers.org. And then /networks, plural, and then A-List. Or you can always look at the blog too. There's a link if you scroll down to them. Thank you again, everyone, for being part of the show. And don't forget to like, click, and share. And if you haven't subscribed, please do so. We usually do 2 shows a week. And again, maybe you can be our next guest. I'd love to hear your story. Bye now.